Hello.
My name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 80. I'm recording it on Saturday, January 24th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is There's No Such Thing as a Free Lunch. Or is there? The idea for this one, I actually have an article at the site that explores a very similar theme. I think I called that something like, Yes, Virginia, there is such a thing as a free lunch. And I don't know if I can remember right offhand what section of the site it was at. My guess is the Investing for Humans section. That's the one that jumps into my head. But so the idea, the question of the free lunch is one that I've explored in before. But what brought it into my mind today is that the podcast I did yesterday was I talked about what bonds and what should you be invested in when you're not invested in stocks. And that one came from a question by Colleen, sent me an email about a week ago. And she had a comment. And she said, two great comments really on the same idea. She said, the way she found my site is that she had some money to invest and she was basically sold on passive investing or indexing, not on passive investing, on indexing, I'm sorry. And she wanted to see if there were pros and cons, or, you know, she sort of asked herself, you know, is it too good to be true? And so she probably entered a search, something like pros and cons of index investing, and I have an article with that title. So she found my site, and, you know, that cost her. She was persuaded that the valuation-informed indexing approach made a little more sense than the conventional passive approach. But then she said, you know, that same skepticism that led her to my site also caused her to have a little bit of doubt about valuation-informed indexing, which is great. It shows that she's got the right mindset for this approach. You know, skeptical, but not cynical. Skeptical, but not cynical. And she said, trust but verify. That's our motto. And she said, so she had some questions for me, and she wanted to know, when she's not invested in stocks, what she should be invested in. But I commented on the podcast. I said, I really like that she said that. It's a really good sign that one of the big mistakes in investing is that people are intimidated by investing. This is probably the biggest problem. Most middle-class investors are intimidated by the subject. They don't understand investing. They feel that they don't understand investing, and they feel that they're not capable of understanding investing. That's the real killer. And so people want to put their trust in gurus. They want to just turn it all over to some expert with a capital E and not have to think it through themselves. And that's bad from so many different directions. It's bad for the people following the experts because they often get bad advice. It's bad for the experts because it means the experts become gurus and they're not questioned. And when they're not questioned, they stop learning. And, you know, the smartest expert in the world isn't capable of staying on top of things unless he's challenged, unless he's learning. So I don't like all this guru stuff, even a tiny little bit. And what it made me think of, you know, when I record, what often happens is I'm recording one podcast and I just say something, I'm working on a riff, and something comes out and it rings a little bell in my head. And what Colleen, it just rang a bell in my head when I read Colleen's words, when she said, it's too good to be true. Indexing is too good to be true. And you know, that's what caused her to have her initial doubts. That's what caused her to put, you know, put it into a search engine and ultimately find my site. And what hit me was, as I was thinking back on it, you know, why did I hear a bell go off in my head? I was thinking this morning when I went over those words by Colleen. And the reason a bell went off in my head is this is the argument that people use to sell passive investing. The argument that Colleen is using to move away from it. I mean, it's comical, but it's true. Colleen is taking a common sense, realistic, you know, practical, middle class sort of attitude. You know, middle class people are generally practical people. They're generally realistic people, prudent people. This is characteristic of us, okay? And she was trying to do that, and she was applying it to the investing realm. And what kills me is, you know, I am not a fan of passive investing. I am not a fan of the idea of staying at the same stock allocation regardless of prices, not even a little bit. And I'm always trying to think, how can I persuade people to give up on that idea? Because once people give up on that idea, we enter the golden age of middle-class investing, because there's 30 years of research showing us, pointing us to more effective ways to invest that is rarely discussed today because it's taboo, because it undercuts the arguments for passive investing. And we haven't been allowed to do that. That's mean. It's mean to tell people that they got some things wrong. And the reason, you know, there's a number of reasons why passive investing became popular, but one of the big reasons is the way it is marketed. And I don't mean that as a bad thing. All investing strategies have to be marketed. They have to be promoted. It's part of the job. If you have a good investing strategy, you need to market it. But we market through emotion. Not generally, not through intellect. And one of the emotional appeals of passive investing is that it makes this argument that there's no such thing as a free lunch. This is a big push in the passive investing literature. There's no such thing as a free lunch. You know, they'll justify everything on this grounds. They'll say, oh, you can't pick stocks. It's impossible. Warren Buffett, he's just lucky. He's just lucky. You don't know what he's doing. Just luck. How do we know that? No such thing as a free lunch. If you could pick stocks that and make higher returns than us passive investors, that would be a free lunch. No such thing. Can't do it. Same thing with timing the market, the horrible, horrible, horrible crime of timing the market, which means paying attention to price. That's what timing the market means, that you care about the price you pay. Why do we know timing the market can't work if we're passive investors? If you were able to time the market, you'd be able to earn a better return than us passive investors. That would be a free lunch. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Can't do it. Proves it. No such thing as a free lunch. See, what's going on, and as I say, not necessarily intentionally. I don't think in most cases it's intentional. But what's going on is that we are being marketed. The people pushing this idea are appealing to our emotions. And we're falling for it because there's a lot of emotional appeal in this idea that there's no such thing as a free lunch. Now, on first inspection, you might look at it and say, what, are you crazy? The way most get-rich-quick schemes are marketed is they are a free lunch. You know, the headline of the piece will say, you know, Motley Fool was often criticized for this. You know, we'll teach you how to crush the market. You know, we will teach you how to crush the market. Get-rich-quick scheme. The passive investors say, no, you can't crush the market. We're not a get-rich-quick scheme. We're the opposite. We're telling people they can't crush the market. And that is true. They are telling people they can't crush the market. And that is to their credit. That's good. That's a step forward. But they use emotion to sell their investing ideas just like all the other get-rich-quick schemes do. And I call passive investing a get-rich-quick scheme. people, I'm sometimes asked, you know, I always remember the post by Petey Person where he said, Rob, you used to be such a puppy dog of a poster. What happened? And what happened is I learned through, you know, hard experience that you have to say things the way you believe them. And that the big problem with passive, the popularity of passive investing, it's not that people are dumb. These ideas are, well, some of them, of course, are wonderful, but the ideas that are wrong are transparently dumb. They're just obviously dumb. And the idea that you shouldn't change your stock allocation when prices change dramatically is just, you know, it's all-time dumb. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, I think. But the reason why that idea persists is that people don't challenge it. And we got to a point where it became taboo. You tell people you can time the market and they're ready to put you in jail. And they believe it. They're not lying in that sense. I mean, they're wrong, but they're not lying. They believe you can't time the market. I am totally persuaded at this point. I've studied that question in depth. You know, I go to the Goon Central Board partly to learn these things, and I study what they say, and they believe you can't time the market. I am persuaded of this. Even though all the evidence is contrary, they're persuaded of it. So you have to ask yourself why. The obvious question is why? How did they get so persuaded? Well, it's such a crazy idea. And the answer is they were marketed, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean that marketing is bad. But they were marketed, and the marketing worked. In other words, the marketing, it's like, you know, Apple Computer markets to me. Apple Computer says, think different. That used to be a slogan they had. I'm not sure they have it anymore. But, you know, think different is a marketing slogan. It was designed for Rob Bennett. You know, I just eat that stuff up. And they're selling me. As I say, it's not bad because they're connecting. They're forming an emotional connection with their target market. It's just what they want to do. There's nothing wrong with marketing, in my opinion. But it can be dangerous. And, of course, in the investing area, if you fall for a marketing pitch and the marketing pitch sells you something that doesn't work, obviously it hurts you. So the reason people believe in passive investing is not that they're intellectually convinced of its merits. I don't believe anyone is intellectually convinced of its merits, including John Bogle. This is my belief. I think John Bogle himself was marketed in the sense that he formed an emotional attachment to this idea. He probably marketed himself. Or, you know, maybe the academic researchers who came up with the efficient market theory marketed him. I don't know. But the attachment to this idea is not an intellectual attachment. It's an emotional attachment. And it's deep. And it all goes to this middle class virtue of realism and practicality. And skepticism. These are all virtues. And the phrase, there's no such thing as a free market, that has great marketing appeal, great emotional appeal. Because we've been looking for an investment theory like that. We've been middle class people, there are millions of us, and we have to invest and we don't really understand stocks and we're intimidated. And we're really turned off by all the get-rich-quick schemes. And, of course, there's a lot of them. We're turned off by it. And passive investing came along, and it made what appeared to be an anti-get-rich-quick marketing pitch. And we ate it up. And I'm here to tell you, passive investing is the greatest get-rich-quick scheme that ever came down the pike. Not intentionally so. And I'm not sure that a lot of the other ones were intentionally so. Some of them are, no doubt. But I think some of the other get-rich-quick schemes were not intended to do harm. That the people who concocted them sold themselves on the idea before they sold others. They believe in the idea. Just because something's a marketing pitch and just because something's a get-rich-quick scheme doesn't mean the people promoting it don't believe in it. And I think what happened with passive investing is that they came up with an idea that appeals to this middle-class virtue of skepticism. And the market the marketing phrase that sums that up perfectly is there's no such thing as a free market. There's no such thing as a free lunch. So I want to explore that in this podcast. And I have four arguments. I need to make some use of my legal training. I went to law school a long time ago, and I went always with the intention of becoming a journalist, but I never intended to practice law. But I learned some things, learned a little bit about how to construct an argument. And so when I write these podcasts, I think I write the notes sort of the way I would write a legal brief sometimes, you know, argument one, argument two, and they're counter arguments, you know, it's like, if this, then argument one, but if you don't believe that, then we'll try argument two, you know, so it sort of makes me smile. All right, I'll list the arguments and then I'll go through them. Argument one is passive investing is the free lunch. Argument two is there is such a thing as a free lunch. Argument three is valuation-informed indexing is a bit of a free lunch. And argument four is it's not really a free lunch. I hope I can remember the arguments when I read them. I'm not sure I remember what they mean, but I hope. Let's say a prayer for Rob, please. Argument one, passive investing is the free lunch. Now, well, first, just as a preface, I want to say this argument that there's no such thing as a free lunch. I was talking here, you know, a second ago about lawyers and their you know their rhetorical tricks. Boy, is that ever a powerful rhetorical trick? This claim that there's no such thing as a free lunch. It is the greatest. It's not true. It's obviously half true. It's a half truth. There's truth in it, but it's not entirely true. But it is. It's in a fundamental sense, it's not true. In an ultimate sense, it's not true. But it is a powerful rhetorical trick. What you're trying to do when you advocate something is obviously to persuade people to your position, and so you need to make positive arguments to persuade. And you need to have arguments to defend against attacks. The argument there's no such thing as a free lunch. Passive investing enthusiasts use that as their argument against every claim that comes along. I saw one. This was, I think, yesterday at the Bogleheads board. Somebody put up a thread, and he said he saw something at a value investing board or site, and it was talking about certain stocks that are undervalued and therefore they're a good buy. And he just said, what a free lunch. This guy thinks he can identify this and it's going to work. You know, what a free lunch. Yeah, they're mocking it. They're ridiculing the idea. But you can, once you buy into the idea that there's no such thing as a free lunch, well, intelligence no longer has any value. That's what they're saying. The way they use that phrase is no amount of devoting intellect to the study of stock investing will do you no good. That's the claim that's being made. That guy Chinwhisker, he at least, he's sort of upfront about it. He calls himself a know-nothing investor. That's what passive investing is. It's the theory of investing that says the use of human intellect provides no benefit. And why do they think it provides no benefit? There's no evidence of this, but there are these studies that they point to, but all the studies have holes in them that they point to. But aside from the studies, is there anything? It's this claim that there's no free lunch. Show them that there are people who have always picked stocks effectively, and they'll say, well, that can't be so because there's no such thing as a free lunch. Show them that you can time the market, and they'll say, that can't be so. There's no such thing as a free lunch. It's an answer to everything. It's a tautology. If you believe there's no such thing as a free lunch, then how can anyone prove there is? Because if somebody shows you something that works well, you dismiss it as a free lunch. Well, how about turning this argument in on the passive investors themselves? Is passive investing not a free lunch? Here's the claim they make. They claim you don't need to know anything about investing. You don't need to study companies. You don't need to study annual reports or balance sheets. You don't need to ever change your allocation. You only need to invest in one fund. Now they tend to say it should be more than one, but for a long time, Bogle used to argue, all you need to invest in is the S&P 500. That covers you. You don't need to invest globally. He argued for a long time. Now they're changing this, but it used to be, you don't need to invest globally because if you're invested in the S&P 500, those companies are global companies. And so you're getting global coverage through the S&P 500. You don't need to do anything. All you need to do is, you know, write a check to Vanguard. I mean, that's a facetious comment, but that's essentially what it comes to. Write a check to Vanguard and you're covered, man. And you'll get great returns. They show you these charts with the compounding returns, and you're getting 6.5% real, and it's compounding. And in a short amount of time, you're rich. And you never have to read a book. You never have to read you have to read one book to know to do it. But that's pretty much it. That's passive investing. Is that not a free lunch? Has there ever been a bigger free lunch in history than to tell people it's that easy? This is why, you know, I liked Colleen's comment. She was right to be attracted to index investing. There's index investing is wonderful, and I advocate it. I advocate a form of index investing. It's a wonderful option that we have available to us. And, you know, God bless John Bogle for developing it and promoting it and, you know, helping it along and setting up a company where we can buy index funds at low cost. All to the good. But it's a free lunch. You know, even if you're going to argue, I don't believe that the passive approach to indexing works, but say that it did. It would be a free lunch if it did. Even if it worked. I mean, to say something's a free lunch doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't work. Say that it works perfectly. It's still a free lunch. Why are you getting these huge returns without having to put any effort in? Now, of course, the smug sort of explanation you will get from the passive investing dogmatist is, well, you know, we're just smarter than everybody else. But there's a contradiction there, because they're saying intelligence doesn't help. See, there's a contradiction that goes right to the core of this whole business. You know, why do they get such great returns with such little effort? Because they're smarter than everybody else in the world, this little club. Why is it that intelligence then doesn't help anybody else? It only helps passive investors. If you're smart enough to be passive, you get rich. But if you're smart enough to pick stocks, nope, no benefit. Free lunch, no benefit. You see the contradiction? It goes right to the core. Either intelligence is a plus or it's not. If it's a plus, well, maybe that explains how passive investing can pay off so well. But if it's a plus, it should be a plus in other areas as well. The reason, of course, why they say intelligence doesn't pay off is they say the market's efficient. The market prices everything in, and therefore intelligence offers you no benefit. But if the market prices everything in, why doesn't it price in passive investing? Why doesn't the market price in all the insights of John Bogle and all his followers? What they are ultimately assuming when they say the market prices everything in is that the market is rational. And if the market is rational and passive investing is the best strategy, and it's been proven scientifically, as they claim, if all that's so, then the market should all be passive investors. If we were all rational, we would all be passive. And if we were all passive, that passive's not smarter than everybody else anymore. See, it's all a circle. It's all a big logic circle. It goes round and round and round and round, and it never goes anywhere. What it comes to is passive investing works because the passive investing people believe it works. And the passive investing people believe it works because it works. And it works because they believe it works. And it just goes round and round and round and round and round. And of course, all this, the spinning is just fine until it stops working. And, you know, that's what happened in January of 2000. Since then, it hasn't been working so hot. It works. Passive investing is irrational. The idea that you don't need to change your allocation in response to price is irrational. And the market was irrational from 95 through 2000. So passive investing was king of the hill. Rational stock investing was great from 75 through 2000. But from 75 through 95, rational investing would have had you heavily in stocks. It's only 95 to 2000 at which the passives and the rationals split off. Well, 95 through, I guess, 2008, really. But it's only, they split off from 95 through 2008 for 13 years, but it's only five of those 13 in which passive was superior. Passive was superior from 95 through 2000. From 2000 forward, rational has been superior, and we are now back at price levels where rational investing has you back heavily in stocks. Rational is the strategy where you look at the price level of stocks before buying, and you invest in stocks when the long-term value proposition is strong, when the price is reasonable, and you lower your stock allocation when prices are insanely dangerous, as they were from 95 through 2008. So passive investing is itself a free lunch. So if they're going to argue that every other investing strategy ever developed must be rejected on grounds that it's a free lunch, they should also argue that passive investing is itself a free lunch. They should acknowledge, I should say. The same logic should apply to passive investing that applies to everything else. They're offering great returns at little effort. That's called a get-rich-quick scheme. That's what the phrase means. It's a get-rich-quick scheme. It's the biggest get-rich-quick scheme because it's not some little thing that, you know, some guy got a website somewhere and he's promoting it. Passive investing is what you hear from all the big names. Money Magazine promotes passive investing. You know, John Bogle promotes it. So, you know, when you're looking for basic investing advice, what you're probably going to hear is passive investing. So it's a bigger get rich quick scheme than all the little ones. It's fundamentally a get rich quick scheme. It's not the worst in the sense that it's not the most preposterous. There's clearly, you know, there's a lot of good principles in passive investing. And so it's not the worst in that sense. But in terms of dollar losses, it's the worst because it's so much more popular than these others. And it appeals to the very people who would like to avoid get-rich-quick schemes. The middle-class investor wants to avoid get-rich-quick schemes. And he's sucked into this one because the marketing pitch for it is that it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. And if you want to understand why it's a get-rich-quick scheme, just ask yourself, how is it that passive investing delivers a free lunch while also teaching that a free lunch is impossible? Argument two, there is such a thing as a free lunch. First, I argued that passive investing is itself a free lunch, but now I want to argue that the statement there's no such thing as a free lunch is not entirely so. It's a healthy instinct to be skeptical of free lunches. That's what Colleen did. She was skeptical, and she was right to be skeptical. That's a very healthy instinct, and we don't want to give that up. But rational investing is all about emotional balance. You want to balance your skepticism. You don't want to be gullible. You don't want to be naive. But you don't want to be cynical. Cynical is going too far. And the passive investing dogmatists who say only passive investing can work, nothing else, that's to reject every other investing strategy as, you know, dumb or wrong or foolish is cynicism. It's taking skepticism too far. There are lots of smart people out there picking stocks. It's hard for me to believe they're all just dummies. Maybe that stock picking is not for you. And it may be that stock picking is not for me, but I am not so cynical that I'm going to get on board an argument that picking stocks effectively is impossible. That just is an extreme viewpoint. It's become conventional wisdom in the passive investing era, but assessed objectively, that's an extreme viewpoint. And it's a cynical viewpoint. The same thing with timing the market. I can buy the idea that lots of approaches to timing don't work. I am personally persuaded that short-term timing doesn't work. And that's by far the most popular form of timing. So it may well be that 90% of the people who try to time the market fail. I can go along with that statement. Just as I can go along with the, I don't know if I'd go along with the statement that 90% of the people who try to pick individual stocks fail, but it's a healthy percentage. It's more than 50%. Maybe it's 70%. And maybe with timing, maybe it really is 90%. But the fact that 70% can't do something or 90% can't do something doesn't mean 100% can't do it. And it certainly doesn't mean that even those of us not trying to do it can't learn from the ones who can. Even if we can't ourselves pick stocks effectively, we can learn from those who do. We can learn insights about how to invest from those people. And even if for some reason we elect not to time the market, I wouldn't advise it, but some might elect not to do so for rational reasons. There are rational reasons not to time the market. The one that comes to mind, somebody mentioned on the Financial Webring forum, they just said, some people just don't feel that they are emotionally equipped to change their stock allocations at appropriate times. And they'll just take a vow not to change them at all and go with a lower stock allocation, you know, so that they don't suffer huge price crashes, but they just prefer not to ever change their allocation. If someone makes that choice on that basis, that's a rational reason for making that choice. But even that person could learn something about how stocks work from people who do time the market effectively. So we can always learn. And the question here is, there is such a thing as a free lunch. I'm sort of getting at this when I talk about the great returns of those who engage in passive investing. Why do those who advocate, how is it that those who advocate passive investing are able to assert that such great returns can be obtained from this very simple approach? The reason they can do that is that stock investing is a free lunch, isn't it? Think about the claim that's being made. Think about John Graney, you know, my good friend at retireearlyhomepage.com and Goon Central. John says that if you save $1 million, his safe withdrawal rate study, which I dispute, his safe withdrawal rate study says you can take out 4%. That's the safe withdrawal rate. So if you have $1 million accumulated, you can take out $40,000 a year, you know, for 30 years. Without worry that your portfolio is going to go bust. Isn't that sort of a free lunch? John retired at age 40. Doesn't have to work. Because he saved money, and he's got this stock market generating returns great enough so that he has total confidence that he can take out whatever he takes out every year. If it's $1 million, he takes out $40,000. I don't know what his portfolio size is. Isn't that sort of a free lunch to be able to quit work at age 40? And all the rest of us, of course, are doing the same thing, you know, in different ways. I don't follow John's approach, but valuation-informed indexing, I have a multiply by 24 rule where you can take out 4% a year. I think you could probably take out 5% if you put your portfolio together intelligently. So if I say you can take out 5% a year, $1 million, you could take out $50,000. Isn't that a free lunch? Stocks in the U.S. have historically provided on average a real annualized return of 6.5%. Isn't that a pretty good deal? Do we have a right to that? You know, do we have a right to even expect that? I don't see how. It's a nice thing. You know, I'm happy about it. But you sure don't get that from a money market account. You don't. There's not too much else out there. You can get 6.5% real. On average, not one time, but on average, for 138 years now. Isn't that a free lunch? See, this idea that there's no such thing as a free lunch, I don't know. As I say, the way I think about it is that it's an extreme. There was a guy, this was so many years ago at Motley Fool. I have no idea what his screen name was, but, you know, he came on the board. This was, you know, when I started posting there, 1999, well, this was summer 2000, I think, March of 2000, maybe. That's my recollection. And somewhere in the spring of 2000, March, April, May. And, you know, stocks had been doing well from 75 through 2000, 25 years of good returns. Obviously, there were drops, but the drops were short-lived. And, you know, people started to get all kinds of ideas in their head. And this guy came to the board, and he was saying, oh, I can get 15% a year. And he was adamant. And this is a case, you know, Graney's goon squad drove him away. And, you know, I agree with Graney. I think the guy was wrong to say he could count on 15%. I mean, he was saying he was going to retire based on this, that he'd get 15% every year. I agree. I don't agree with driving him off. I think the guy's entitled to his opinion. And, you know, if people buy it, well, you know, that's sort of too bad for them. If a lot of people would learn from it, they'd learn what not to do. So I agree with Graney on the point, but I don't agree on the tactics. But I don't believe the guy could get 15%. But you see, the passive investing people are taking a step in the right direction from that, in saying, oh, you know, that's a free lunch. Don't believe it. That's good. That's healthy. But they go too far in saying there's no such thing as any free lunch. Stock investing is a bit of a free lunch. It's a gift. It's, you know, these wonderful returns you get from stocks. Now, some might say, well, you don't even need to make that point. That's so obvious, Rob. I disagree. I need to make the point, and I'll tell you why. I just participated the last couple of days in a thread at the Frugal Dad blog. Frugal Dad, he runs a very, very popular, well-done blog, and I've been following it, not super close, but I follow it when I can for some time. And Frugal Dad had a... he had a blog entry, I think Tuesday, and you know, it was sort of shocking, really, the headline. Maybe it was Monday, and it was Monday, and I put it, I linked to it at my site on Tuesday. And the title, I don't think I can recall it exactly, but it was something along the lines of, have we been sold a bunch of lies? And he's talking about investing, talking about the troubles. You know, and I pointed to it because I also commented at the blog, and then I had some people direct questions at me. You know, that guy, and he's a smart guy. I follow this guy. He's no dummy. He's hardworking. He's very hard. I admire his work ethic. His work ethic frightens me, frankly. I can't keep up with this guy. I've got a bit of a work ethic, but this guy puts me to shame. He's a machine. I read one post of his where he said at one time he used to post at 50 different blogs every day, and I'm like, holy moly, I can't post at 50 in a year. Now this guy can post at 50 in a day, but his comments must have been a lot shorter than the typical Rob Bennett comment. I think that much is fair to say. But anyway, I'm sure his comments were not dumb because he's a smart guy. if this guy, so what this guy was saying, you know, I think his word lie is unfortunate. I don't think we've been told lies. I do think we've been told very, very poor advice, but not lies. But my point here is, this guy, he's speaking for a lot of people. This guy, this thought didn't just pop into this guy's head. This guy has a lot of followers. And not everybody on the blog agreed with him. Some did, though. And I think this idea is going to catch on. This idea, what he was proposing in this blog is that people, I don't know, propose might be a little strong. He was clearly suggesting it as a possibility that he's thinking over the idea of taking his money out of stocks. Now, this, I think this guy wants to retire early. He wants to achieve financial freedom early in life. And he's saving a lot of money to get there. And now he's looking at what happened in the stock market, and I think he's kicking himself. He's saying, I'm working hard to cut costs everywhere else, and I'm throwing the money out the window by putting it in stocks. And he's right on, speaking my language, because the whole reason I concocted this valuation-informed indexing approach is I got into this from the frugality side. I started out learning how to save money, and then I came to care about my money, and I said, I don't want to blow it all on stocks. So I came up with a way to invest in stocks that is frugal, you know, where you don't suffer these huge price crashes that wipe people out for decades. I want no part of it. My point is, people like Frugal Dad are now questioning whether stocks offer a good value proposition. He's saying it's not worth it. He's saying, I'm going to figure out how to retire early without stocks. So the point I make when I say stocks are a free lunch, stocks are a good deal, that point very much needs to be made. And of course, the passive investors, they can't say it because they say there is no such thing as a free lunch. Their cynicism traps them. And frankly, it's not just Frugal Dad. There are people at the Bogleheads board thinking of getting out of stocks. Taylor Larimore is the co-author of the Bogleheads Guide to Investing, and Taylor Larimore is thinking of getting out of stocks. He said this on a thread, a very controversial thread. He said if stock prices continue to drop, he's getting out. This is his plan B. Plan A, passive investing. Plan B, get out. It's the natural follow-up to passive investing, because passive investing is such an insanely dangerous strategy, and that is what I believe, that it inevitably leads to abandoning stocks down the road. We don't know when, but sooner or later, if you never change your stock allocation, sooner or later, you're going to get caught in a bone-crushing price crash that's going to cause you to swear off stocks for life. This is one of the biggest objections I have to it. It's not just the money loss that I object to. It's that it causes people to hate stocks. And stocks are great. But you see, if you adopt this cynical view, there's no such thing as a free lunch, you can't acknowledge that stocks are great. There are free lunches everywhere you turn in life. You see, all of this thinking that led to passive investing comes from economists. And we need economists. Economists are good people. I have to say this every time I criticize somebody. Economists are smart, you know. Economists are human, and economists make mistakes. And there's, of course, a wonderful joke about the whole idea that there's no free market where, you know, two economists are walking down the road and one sees a $20 bill and he says, oh, look. And the other one says, don't pick that up. He says, why? It's a $20 bill. Why shouldn't I pick it up? He says, if it were really a $20 bill, somebody would have picked it up before you. So it's not real. So don't waste your effort picking it up. That's passive investing for you. Nothing could possibly work, because if it could, somebody smarter would have came along and exploited it before we got here. No sense using your brain to learn how to invest. It's all a waste of energy, because if there were anything that could be done, somebody would have done it before we happened to show up on the scene. Well, I use my brain when I invest. What little I have, I use. I ain't no passive investor. Nobody can lay that one on me. I've got statements in my file 3 feet thick on that one. I'm covered, man. I'm no passive investor. This free lunch is all over the place. It's healthy to be skeptical. When somebody offers you a free lunch, it's healthy to be skeptical and wonder, is this a get-rich-quick scheme? You know, be careful out there. Like they used to say on Hill Street Blues. But don't walk away from a $20 bill. It's free. There's all kinds of free lunches out there. The one that I think about all the time is my two boys, you know, and, you know, they're not, I don't know if they're a free lunch. They've got, they bring their trials, I suppose. But, you know, you look at these guys and you say they weren't, there was a time when they weren't here. These guys were not here. They were physically not on planet Earth, and now they are. And you tell me how they got here. And I know, you know, I know the process. I understand. But truth be told, process or no process, it's a miracle. That's the way it is. I believe in miracles, like that song. You know, if only you, I love that song. If only you believed in miracles, baby, so would I. I believe, I love that song. I believe in miracles. My two boys are miracles. And I see them every day with my own eyes. They're a free lunch. In terms of my life happiness, they're a free lunch. Don't be telling me there's no such thing as a free lunch. You know, if we applied this sort of thinking to other areas of life, where would we be? What if we applied this there's no free lunch stuff to dating? You know, people would say, well, you should date the first person you happen to meet on the street, because if there were a way to find a better life mate for you, somebody would have already found that better life mate. Therefore, she's already married to someone, so you have to marry the first one that walks along the street. Don't time the dating market. Don't try to pick people who are kind and hardworking and considerate and decent and honest. No, that's foolish. That can't be. Nobody could be better than the first person you meet. First person you happen to come across. That's what they're telling you when they tell you passive investing. They say, don't look at the price. Just buy stocks. Whenever you happen to earn enough money to buy some, put it into stocks. Don't worry about the price. It's whatever comes down the street at that moment is good enough. What if we married that way? You know, my wife is a free lunch times 5,000. So, there is such a thing as a free lunch. Argument 3. Valuation-informed indexing is a bit of a free lunch. Now, this one needs to be explored in more depth, but I'll give a sketchy presentation. This is one I need to think about more, but I think that, you know, I don't think valuation-informed indexing is a free lunch in the sense that, to the same extent that passive investing is. And the reason I say that is, passive investing has nothing to say about where all the money came from in the insane bull market of the 1990s. You know, if you read the papers, you know, 20% returns, 30% returns, year after year. You know, where did the money come from? Does anybody ever stop and think? All these, you know, proponents of the theory, there's no such thing as a free lunch, do any of them ever stop to think, where did all the money come from? The trillions and trillions of dollars that we were being told we quote-unquote earned in the 1990s? Where did it all come from? The answer, rational investors will tell you, the answer is we borrowed it from the future. All of the insane returns of the 1990s, not the real returns. There were real returns that were based on economic realities. But the returns above 6.5% a year were not real. That was nonsense. And all the nonsense returns were borrowed from guess who? The investors of 2008 and 2009. They're borrowed from us. that's why we have an economic recession right now. We lent all this money to our prior selves, and now that we have to pay it, as we must if the market is not going to collapse, now that we have to pay it, we don't have money to spend buying stuff. And because we don't have money to buy stuff, the economy has three flat tires in it. Where did the money come from, passive investors? You know, riddle me this. They don't have an answer to that question. No passive investor has a good answer to that question. If they acknowledge that it came from the future, which is the true answer, that we borrowed from the future, if they acknowledge that, then they're foolish to be passive investors, because if you acknowledge that you're borrowing it from the future, then obviously future returns are going to be low, and you ought to be changing your stock allocation, you know, in response. But if you say you don't know where it came from, which is the logically consistent answer for a passive investing dogmatist, then you're saying that it was a free lunch. So, valuation-informed indexing is not a free lunch in that sense. Valuation-informed indexing does make sense of the realities. It does explain where the money came from. So I think it's much less of a free lunch than passive investing. However, the returns for valuation-informed indexing are extraordinary. They are, 6.5% real is the average return, and valuation-informed indexers can realistically count on returns higher than that. I'll go through the logic chain, and if there's a flaw in the logic chain, I hope somebody points it out, but I think it's solid. If the market provides an average return of 6.5% real, That's true. If you followed passive investing for 30 years, you would get that return. That's true. Or something close. Not exactly, but something close. Close enough for practical purposes. Most passive investors are not going to be able to hold for 30 years because most have no idea of how much they're going to suffer in a price crash, because all of this is kept hidden. It's taboo to discuss it. You know, they were telling people on the Bogleheads board to be prepared for a 50% price drop back when prices were at, you know, the P10 level was 30. And the only time we've been at 30, the price drop we experienced was 89%, not 50. So they were giving people no idea what to expect. They were wildly, wildly underestimating the risk. Now 50% is a reasonable number to be prepared for. Now that makes sense. But it didn't make sense back when the P10 level was double what it is today. So most passive investors are not going to be able to stick with it. As we see, you know, we see this in the case of Frugal Dad and Taylor Larimore and many, many others. Bill Bangin is down to zero stocks now. Many, many others, obviously. Millions of people thinking this over. As millions of passive investors go to zero stock allocations, they obviously, you know, some of them that got in early, you know, that got in, I don't know, in the 1980s, that even if they sell, they're going to have a 6.5% return on a long-term basis. But the ones that got in at the top of the bull, they ain't going to have no 6.5% return. Obviously, they've got losses. You know, stocks did not go up from 2000 through 2008, and then they crashed in 2008. So those people obviously have losses if they sell. So if there are millions of people with losses, the passive investors, and if investors overall earn 6.5%, there's got to be some group earning more than 6.5%. The passive investors can earn more because by the nature of passive investing, you limit yourself to the 6.5%. So they can't get more. They get that if they hold for 30 years. They never sell. But a lot of them are going to have to sell because they had no idea what was coming, and they're crushed. So passive investors as a whole have to earn less than 6.5%. I don't see any flaw in the logic chain. If passive investors earn less than 6.5, rational investors, which is the alternative to passive, rational is the strategy that says you do change your allocation when prices get insanely dangerous, so you don't have to sell when prices are low. Rationals have to get more than 6.5% real. I don't see how that logic chain doesn't hold. So, isn't that a bit of a free lunch? You know, it is. It's a bit of a free lunch, and there's other ways in which it's possibly a free lunch. As I mentioned, it's very simple. You know, I mentioned indexing just in general is very simple. Well, you know, valuation informed indexing, it has one complication that you have to look at prices, you know, but not very often. You only need to change your allocation once every 8 or 10 years. So, you know, that's hardly a big big task we've assigned. So for changing your allocation once every 8 or 10 years, you get 6.5, more than 6.5% real, and you don't have to study any balance sheets or anything like that. Well, that is a bit of a free lunch. And that's, frankly, I think that's cause to be skeptical. I think it can be explained. And, the biggest explanation, really, is that... Well, I'll get to that in the last one. I'll get to that in the fourth argument. But there is a bit of a free lunch there, from one way, at least from one way of looking at it. And there's other ways in which skepticism is also called for. Now, I have a podcast on the downside. I think it's called The Downside of Valuation-Informed Indexing, or Arguments, the Case Against Valuation-Informed Indexing. That's a good one to listen to. And I make some arguments against the investing strategy that I recommend. And, you know, I think that should be one of them, that there's elements of it that are almost good to be true. And I don't think they really are, but an argument can be made that the reason why it works is just that people don't know about it. You know, people say this about indexing. But, you know, maybe indexing worked for a while because people didn't know about it. And then when it became too popular, it became a get-rich-quick scheme. So it can't work. Maybe the same thing's true of valuation-informed indexing. You know, if everyone learns about it, right now it's a small group that knows about it. Well, if everyone learned about it, it might well be, and I think a good case could be made, if everyone invested rationally, if everyone changed their allocation when, you know, prices got out of control, prices wouldn't get so out of control. The market would be self-regulating. And if that were the case, the risk premium for stocks might well diminish. So you wouldn't keep getting the 6.5% real. If everyone did this, I still think you would get a healthy return, but maybe it would drop to 5.5 instead of 6.5. You know, I just don't know. But it's a reason for skepticism that it just, if you accept all the arguments for valuation-informed indexing, and I think the case is very strong, but if you accept them all, there's still this problem, this intellectual problem, that it sounds too good to be true. And I think that's fair. So I like it, you know, that Colleen said that. I liked it. It was a healthy reaction. I think it holds, but I think we need to be wary of any holes. And one hole that I can see, and she didn't argue it, but she suggested it. She said she was going to invest in three things. A broad U.S. index fund, an international fund, a global fund, and a bond fund. And the fact that she's going to invest globally suggests that she doesn't think the S&P or the total stock index is good enough. You have to be global. And, you know, our research, the research we do for the calculators, is on the S&P, because that's what's available to researchers. You know, there's lots of data. But I think a good case can be made that our economy is becoming a global economy, and it may be that in the future, this 6.5 that we've gotten in the U.S. market won't apply. And does 6.5 apply globally? I don't know. You can't say that. It might. Obviously, there are going to be some markets globally that are going to do better than 6.5, but there are some that are going to do worse. And overall, is it going to be 6.5? I think not. I think the U.S. is a bit exceptional. So in that sense, using the 6.5 number is probably a little too good to be true. And we use it because, you know, I mean, Bogle really made that idea popular, that all you have to do is invest in the U.S. and you're set. And, I think it may be one of those things where once it became widely known that that was true, it was on its way out. It wasn't going to be true much longer, because it is too good a deal. It is a little too good to be true. So I think in that sense, skepticism is called for. I still say that even if 6.5 doesn't apply in the future, and I've persuaded myself that it doesn't, as I say, the other argument I made is that you get better than 6.5, so maybe the two cancel each other out. I don't know. But even if 6.5 doesn't apply, even if it's 5.5, that's still a very good return, and it's still a return that would beat what passive investors get. In other words, the same problems, if globalization is going to lower returns in the future for the S&P, it's going to lower returns for passive indexers as well. So you still want to have the better approach, and valuation-informed indexing comes out as the better approach either way. But I do think you should be giving thought to the fact that in some respects, valuation-informed indexing is a bit of a free lunch, and you do need some skepticism is justified. Now, the last argument is argument four. It's not really a free lunch. And the question here is why? You know, why do we get these great returns? And are they really free? They're free. The reason they're characterized, anything good is characterized as free by the passive investing mindset. But I would argue that the returns you get from valuation-informed indexing are not entirely free, in quotes. You know, what does it mean to be free? They are intellectually free. In other words, you can get these great returns, 6.5% or possibly a little more, possibly a little less, whatever it is. You can get these great returns without devoting much intellectual effort to the investing process at all. I mean, all you have to do is, spend a little time with the stock return predictor, get a sense of what your allocation should be, and then do it. You know, you don't have to read annual reports. You don't have to read books on investing. You should check some sites out before you do it to see whether it really makes sense. You know, check out critics of the idea and see if they make any good points. Certainly you should do that. But after you've done that, and that doesn't take, a real long time, after you've done that, all you really need to do is check the stock return predictor every now and again and change your allocation, when prices get wildly out of control, once every 8 or 10 years. So intellectually, it could be said that it's a free lunch. But emotionally, it's not a free lunch at all. Emotionally, this stuff is hard. I've told you the story before. I got out of stocks in 1996, and I had a friend at the place where I worked, and we used to go to lunch a couple times a week. And this was in the late 90s, and stocks were going up 20, 30% a year, and he would laugh at me, on the days when there were big upturns. He would just laugh at me, and in a kind way. It wasn't mean-spirited. And I'd say, I'm going with what the historical data says. I said, I can't go against it. I don't think I'm smarter than the historical data, That's how a passive investor would put it. So was it free? when I had an emotional struggle to stick with what made sense? And was it free? And, you know, in all the years since, where there's been all this, you know, ridicule and all this sort of thing? Is it free? Is it free when you know, one of the things the, you know, my critics will say, they'll say, oh, when prices get low, Rob's not going to want to be in stocks. He's going to be scaredy cat. He's going to be scaredy cat. Well, if prices fall another 50%, as they could, I hope not, but they could. There's no economic reason why they should, but there are good psychological reasons why they might. If prices fall another 50%, it is going to be scary to be in stocks. If prices fall another 50%, the stock return predictor is going to be telling you that the most likely 10-year return is something in the neighborhood of 17% real per year. It's going to be amazing. But how many of us who understand the intellectual arguments are going to have the emotional fortitude to go with high stock allocations? That's a question to ponder. And, oh, I think it can be done. I think it can be done. And I think those who went with low stock allocations when prices were insane are a lot better positioned to do it than those who went, you know, who were, than the passive investors who are, you know, stunned at the moment, paralyzed with fear. So the rational investors are in a lot better shape. But emotionally and financially. But all that said, it's not going to be an easy thing to do. So if we earn 6.5% real or more as a response, you know, as a consequence of following evaluation informed indexing, was it really a free lunch or did we earn it? See, the whole flaw of passive investing, the root flaw is the efficient market theory. The root flaw is the idea that all that matters in investing is rationality, intellect. And the root criticism of the rational investors is that's not what investing's about. Investing is primarily an emotional endeavor. The intellectual stuff matters. It's got its place. But it's probably 30% of the project. 70% is the emotional stuff. So, if the valuation-informed indexers are the ones who have the emotional stuff right, why shouldn't they earn 6.5% real? And of course, if you look at it on a value-to-the-market perspective, we are saving the market. When the market gets to insanely high price levels, there needs to be somebody trying to pull the price down or things just go off into orbit. And at least the valuation-informed indexers are making an effort. They're lowering their stock allocations. They're pulling things in the right direction. And when prices are hitting, you know, hitting bottom, we're making an effort to pull things back up. So at least we're providing a counter to this negative emotional energy of the passive investors. So I think a case can be made that while our returns are very generous, they're not entirely unearned. We don't pay an intellectual price for these returns. We pay, it's a very simple investing strategy. It doesn't require intellectual work. But we pay an emotional price. You know, we have to go against the prevailing winds. We have to have the courage of our convictions. We have to be able to read scare stories in the media and tune them out. Tune out the noise, as Bogle says. So, those are my thoughts on the argument that there's no such thing as a free lunch. I think it's a healthy instinct that, you know, that developed that argument. Healthy skepticism of the middle-class investor, but I think there are some problems to the argument too, and I think you need to be aware of both sides of the story to adopt an emotionally balanced approach to investing. Please send feedback if you have any. I'd love to hear from you. There's a Contact Rob button there at the left-hand side of every page of the website. Good luck with your investing strategies. You take care.